The Morning Show. The home team. No, it's both. It's the crossover.
Crossover, step back!
Right here on 960theref.com.
All right, welcome to episode number 187 of the Crossover Podcast. I'm David Johnston from The Morning Show. He is Jeff Dantzler from the home team. And we appreciate you listening to 960 The Ref. Whether it's the traditional way, you know, the old radio, the old 96er. Of course, you can find us on the 960 The Ref app. Downloadable in the App Store for your iPhone and Google Play for your Android. Of course, all the good stuff we have at 960theref.com. But we do love the 960 The Ref app. And you can listen to our local shows. You can listen to Georgia Sports. You can listen to On Demand. And, of course, there is the open mic feature where you can let us know how you're feeling. In fact, we have our 960 The Ref rant of the week. And you can drop a rant in there. It could be a good one or a bad one. And let us know what you're thinking. We play back the rant of the week presented by the new Dr. Pepper Zero Sugar every Friday at 8:50 a.m. So it's something we look forward to every week. Jeff, we got a lot of stuff to get to today, and why don't we go ahead and start with Georgia baseball, where the Bulldogs are in the midst of a tough road trip right now, and finding out, by the way, we're recording this on Wednesday afternoon. We literally just found out a few minutes ago that Georgia will have Liam Sullivan starting the Friday game against the Gators, and then TBA. So Ryan Webb is out for the weekend. Jonathan Cannon, I don't know if he's out yet. I haven't gotten an official word or if he's just not starting. Do you know what the situation is there?
I do not. I was worried with Webb when he had to leave against Arkansas, and Ryan pitched another fine game, but that's, you know, two straight weeks at back and flared up on him. So that's obviously a blow there for Georgia. And I think you just look at it with the Dogs now. Number one, Georgia's going to have to score a lot of runs. This past weekend, Georgia won one out of three at Arkansas, but in that series, and this was the number one team in the country, Georgia gave up 3, 3, and 5. You got to, and I think Coach Strickland will be the first to tell you, you got to find a way to win another game when that's all the runs you give up out
all
there.
All the road against the number one team in the country.
So, I mean, the bats.
They don't homer until the third game.
That's right.
And they lead the league in homers.
That's
they lead
exactly
the country in homers.
That's exactly right. So, Florida, now this is a new stadium, and we know this. Late in the year down there, it's hot. The ball is jumping. So Georgia's going to have to score some runs this weekend. And then I think you just have to look at the pitchers, and let's presume Cannon's available. And just right now, well, you would say your top four pitchers are Ben Harris, Jaden Woods, Liam Sullivan, and Jonathan Cannon. You just got to find a way to piece those innings together to do your best to get one game down there. And then maybe you can swing your way to a second victory. Sunday, to me, is a bit of a wild card there, DJ, because we got this deal again. This is two straight weeks on the road where we go Friday night, Saturday night, and then we're at noon on Sunday. At least last week we were at 2 local time. So that is a quick turnaround, even if we don't go 14 like we did against Auburn. Yeah. So that was a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So essentially we've gone night game, day game. This will be 3 weeks in a row.
And see, I think this past Friday was the equivalent of a 14-inning game because we had the 90-minute rain delay.
Great point.
So we've had two long nights over the last 2 weekends. Mm-hmm. And like you're saying, we got the Friday night game, then the Saturday night game, and then the quick turnaround for the noon start on Saturday.
But I'll tell you, I was going to say, DJ, and I'm sorry, this team, I thought when the season started, with everything that Georgia lost, with attrition, with the injuries that hit, and with everything that everybody else and most everybody else had coming back, big picture, I thought, if we make the SEC tournament and have an overall winning record, I think it's been a successful year.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Georgia's obviously far surpassed that. We've got a really good team. We happen to be playing in an extraordinarily, edit that for me there, extraordinarily elite league right now. And, you know, it's like we've come this far, so now your expectations change. And 14 and 16 in the league, I think you're in the NCAA tournament. 13 and 17, You're on the bubble. Could come down to a Tuesday morning in Birmingham. But this team, I think, has exceeded a lot of expectations. And I know we're just trying to get the duct tape and the Elmer's glue and just trying to hold this thing together right now with the injuries that have hit.
Sure.
But this team has shown so much heart and fight and spunk this year.
They have.
I mean, I have a feeling we're going to get one down there. Now, can we get two? That might be a bit of a stretch. I don't know. Florida's really good. They've won four straight series, but – you know, just every bad blow this team gets, you think, like, boy, that's going to be a knockdown-type blow. They bounce up. They bounce back.
Well, the start that Liam Sullivan had Friday night in Arkansas was maybe a setup at least for what happened on Saturday, and then maybe what happened on Saturday was a setup for what happened on Sunday. So, I mean, is it asking too much for him to go out and go six or seven innings and strike out 11? That might be asking a lot on Friday, but it was so clutch this past weekend that Georgia didn't have to basically throw a staff day and use a ton of guys out of the bullpen. So Georgia may not have won on Friday, but like we had said, that he may have set up the Saturday victory. Can we see that again?
Now, that's a big question now for Liam, who's been so great in his last two outings. You know, he had not gone more than, say, two innings in a game. So now he goes four against Auburn. He goes six against Arkansas. Is he built up to that right now to go out and throw another outing like that? And, you know, there are two ways to say, like, well, you know, he really hasn't been building for it, but also his arm's fresh. And the kid is a competitor. He's tough. And, you know, we were talking to him on the road trip. I'm sure he was nervous, but he's just, you know, he's a 19-year-old kid. He's extremely talented athlete. You know, he's just kind of a goofy kid. It didn't seem to, and when I say, I mean that in a very good way. He's just a playful guy, and he's just like, yeah.
He's your typical college kid.
And his father's been a friend of ours, a friend of mine for a long time, going back to when I was in high school. And I told Liam, I go, listen, buddy, why don't you go there and do two things? Have fun and throw strikes. And he did, and he pitched great. And I think it's the same message this coming weekend.
So, hey, and if they get some hits, they get some hits.
That's fine, but just don't
they
walk.
They hit a home run or two, that's fine. But the walks, the wild pitches, the hit batters,
and that's what's
it just drives
us.
You crazy, and it leads to bad fielding, as we have said many, many, many times. I'd rather get beat with the other team.
Make them base
hits,
you.
Yeah.
How many
make
times
them beat you?
We were Dave and I were doing this on Sunday at Arkansas, watching a couple of guys take BP. As we said, it's hard to hit 400 in BP.
Mm-hmm.
Just that'd be a ground out to second. Okay, that'd be a hit. Ground out to short. Fly out to center. Fly out to center. Fly out to left.
Yeah,
make teams
hard.
Out slugging, and Florida can do that. So that's where I say too, especially now for this team, Georgia's going to have to go score some runs. And again, it might take 10 or 11 one day to win.
And if Georgia can score 11, I'm all for it.
That's right.
We've seen the Dogs score 14 against Vandy on the night that Kumar Rocker started.
That's right.
We've seen the Dogs score, what was the Sunday score? They had
9-1. Yeah, we scored 17 against Kentucky.
Yeah, one game.
I mean, I think you almost have to look at this kind of inverted, like you're doing it through a prism. What did Joe Pesci say at JFK? Man, that's a riddle wrapped inside of an enigma, wrapped inside of a puzzle. But you almost have to look at it. This league is so good with the pitching and the hitting and the defense. If you lose 2-1, well, you know what? We should have pitched better.
Yeah.
If you lose 11-10, well, should have scored two more runs.
You
have to look at that, because as we well know, these games take on their own complexion. And there's sometimes like, boy, this game's being pitched well, but the wind might change directions. Then all of a sudden you get in these bullpens, and a 2-1 game in the fifth is a 7-6 game in the eighth.
It
can turn, but I'm excited about it. I'm so proud of this team and what they've been able to do. And again, they've shown a lot of grit. And I'm fully confident that we'll go down and play well this weekend.
Play well. Play the best you can.
That's all you can do.
And try to play as clean as possible. And but we're going to a place I'm excited to see what their new stadium looks like.
And I think it'll be neat. Although, obviously, we're past a year. Florida was where we were headed when everything shut down last year.
Yep.
So to be going down there is a milestone. And then the announcement came out that we'll have full capacity.
Well, that was the other thing I wanted to bring
which
up.
Which is so awesome. And I know Josh Brooks is excited about that. And of course, the team and the players, and most of all, our fans. And, you know, for so many who haven't gotten to come out this year, I hope everybody gets a chance to make it out to at least one for Ole Miss.
The other thing, too, is maybe bigger picture, and certainly great for next weekend because you're going from 660-something capacity to over 3,000. But bigger picture is I think you can kind of see that this is what it's going to be like for the fall also.
Yes, sir. Yes.
And I know a lot of folks have been wondering about that, and I think this is something that probably gives you a glimpse into September and October and November.
That's a great point, DJ. And Josh has said, I mean, for the last month or so, that our plan is to be at full capacity.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you have to plan for. So that's what Josh is looking at. That's what Kirby Smart and the program's looking at right now. So I got the heads up on that this morning. I thought that was just great news. Can't wait to see it because it was terrific to see that full house in Fayetteville, Arkansas last weekend.
Yeah, full house as in
85%.
Yeah,
in like,
quote
well, we're mark. Only letting in 50%.
Yeah,
90.
It was like full house without Bob Saget.
Right,
he had almost the full house.
Yes,
it was loud. It was probably intimidating to some of our guys who hadn't played a game on this level in that kind of a crowd, and it was awesome.
It was awesome, and especially like we've said for these guys this year that when you think about it, really nobody had a high school season last year.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden, if you went from being a high school junior to welcome the SEC, and now here's 8,000 people out there. But that's why I was so proud of Liam and the job he did. And we really went toe-to-toe with Arkansas. I mean, we could have – it was one of those – all three of those games could have gone the other way. We pulled away in game two, but
– Well, don't you think, though, it's weird? I mean, George, this is why I'm going to Florida, coming back, playing Ole Miss. We've played up to our competition.
Yeah,
we probably played down to our competition some, which explains the 4-5 record against – Missouri and A&M and Auburn. So to me, going to Florida and finishing with Ole Miss and then the Tech game next week also, it's the same thing no matter who we're playing. I don't think that just going to Gainesville means that we have no chance because this team has shown they go on the road. If Arkansas and Vandy are the top two teams in the country, then Georgia's right there with them.
I agree. And so,
but it's a little maddening, and I know Coach Strickland would say this, a little maddening that you didn't get more wins against the bottom of the league, too.
That's right.
But it just goes to show you how tough the SEC is.
Well, it is so brutal. And I mean, even the teams at the bottom are good.
Yeah.
And then you throw in the fact, just the nature of the sport of baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nobody's gone like 150-12 in the majors. I mean, I brought up too, like the 98 Yankees, a lot of people would consider the best team of, let's say at least since the Big Red Machine, so the best team of the last 40 years. They still lost 48 times.
Still lost 48
times.
They
went 114-48. Yeah. They won the World Series, but still, that's if you think just in the grand scheme of things, that's 48 days that you left the stadium in a bad mood because you lost. So it's just it's the nature of the game. And then when you look at the toughness of this league, and then it just so happened with the way the draft went and the way it timed out that this was going to be a year where we knew we were going to be losing a lot of guys. And then other teams brought back extra because there were only five rounds in the draft. And in baseball, and I know every now and then you get an exception like what LSU or what Miami was able to do. But for the most part in the SEC, even like Florida, they went to 7 World Series in, 9 years. But they still had a year where they wound up a game under 500. They went to a regional at 1-over and lost. You are just going to have, because of a cycle, a year where – it's just going to be borderline impossible to be great every year, just because of the draft and the scholarship
situation. Yeah, the nature of the sport.
So this was going to be one of those years for Georgia. And again, I think this team has exceeded so many expectations. And that's part of what's so great. You think about a guy like Josh McAllister. And he's had an all-SEC caliber year.
He's been fantastic.
And, you know, this was basically a
walk-on
fought
the injury
JUCO.
Bug. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, with the transfer portal being what it is, I still feel like there's one or two guys on our team that aren't going to be here next year that we're thinking are. But there's probably a couple, maybe more, really good players somewhere else that are going to be on this team. I mean, it's just the unknown of the transfer portal, especially when these guys don't have to sit out a year.
Yes, it's a huge change, and you know I think we're certainly seeing that with what's happened with our men's basketball team here at Georgia. I mean, we've lost just so many guys, and I know what's frustrating. You know, we're kind of looking last year. We got those wins over Missouri and LSU, and you're thinking, boy, with Wheeler, with Johnson, with Kamara, it's a really good nucleus there. And now, I mean, it's going to be basically an entirely new team next year.
So does this feel like, I mean, is there any other team in the country that has had this many players
I don't know.
Enter the portal? I honestly have not kept up with every single team. I know there's a ton of players in the portal in all these different sports. But this one here just seems incredible with the players that have left.
And I know the numbers for basketball. The last time I checked, which was last week, I think it was 27% of men's college basketball players were in the portal. So
it feels like Georgia's accounting for 10% of that just itself.
But you start thinking about that for all 300-plus teams – that's averaging 13 scholarships. You're averaging 3 to 4 guys on every team in America. I mean, that is just an extraordinarily high number.
And apparently the SEC is going to relent and allow the intra-conference transfers to not have to sit out. And I think I was looking at something that Tony Barnhart had written today. I want to make sure I'm crediting the correct person. I think it was Tony. And he brought up a point, either he brought up a point or he was responding to someone else's point, but it had to do with To'o To'o from Tennessee going to Bama. And
I was really worried about Bama this year. I'm glad they got him some help after there.
Yeah, didn't know if they were going to be able to make
not. Yeah, they might be able to make a bowl game now.
But basically, Tony's thoughts were that would you rather see him playing for a team in your conference or him going to like an Ohio State or a Clemson and then maybe having to go up against him in a playoff game. And he basically said the coaches will adjust to this.
Well, it's you can complain about it all you want, and I don't like it. I think all this has happened so fast as well. Yeah. I don't like the portal, and with a lot of the other things going on, my big take on it has been what's best for the game, because I love the game. I love college athletics. And in my opinion, this is not good for the game. But we're going to still be there cheering on the dogs and loving the dogs, and every fan base is still going to be cheering on their guys. And I think for men's basketball in particular, this could cause a problem because it could be tougher for a lot of fans maybe to emotionally invest with the players at your school. If you're like, well, golly, there's a good chance they're just going to be gone. And in a lot of real powerhouse schools, you kind of already had that with the one and done. But there's, from a coaching standpoint, there's really no need in whining about it or anything, because the die has been cast. Now, maybe it'll change in a year or two, but for right now, it's just something that everybody's got to deal with.
Will your gears be ground if Xavier Wheeler rolls into Athens next year wearing a Kentucky uniform?
It's the type of thing. And kids have always transferred, but you've had the deal where you have to sit out a year. And that's the punitive part. But because, and again, I think for the good of the game, and you know, and I get it. There's an argument that can be made for players' rights. Well, coaches jump around. In my opinion, that's different because it's their job. But I'm not here to argue that. I just don't think it's good for the game. And I do think with that, there is more potential ugliness that could come out of this.
Unintended consequences.
Unintended consequences. So now back to what you were saying about Toa Toa. It's interesting with a guy like that. I think, well, I just assumed him go ahead and go to Alabama. I remember thinking that when the running back, Trey Sanders, who's at Bama now, and it was kind of between us, Florida, yeah, and Alabama, and it sounded like we were the lead, but then everybody said, well, Holyfield's going to come back, and then it was between Bama and Florida, and Holyfield left, and he signs with Bama. And I remember thinking, well, you know what? I would rather him go to Alabama than Florida because they've already got two or three. They can only play. They can only have 11 on the field at once.
They stay might, fresh, though.
Right. They might have the 80 best guys, yeah, that we play against, but they can only play 11. Whereas if a guy like that goes somewhere else, he might could be a program type changer.
So you're saying that like a team that's on that next level that could use one really, really, really good player, like you said, could put them potentially over the top.
Yes, like I would think that let's say Bama's going to be the favorite in the West next year.
Like if you went to A&M.
Yeah.
I don't know what their situation is at,
sure,
linebacker,
absolutely,
but
yeah,
if you went to A&M or potentially an Auburn or something,
yeah,
like that.
Or you think, like, let's say Kirby's first year, we go 8-5 and we had those three heartbreaking losses at home.
Yep.
Could a guy like that have been worth, you know, maybe he gets a sack.
Does Georgia beat Vanderbilt that year?
Maybe. Do we get a sack on the Hail Mary instead,
yeah,
of giving it up?
Yep.
You know, do we not give up all those big plays to Tech? You know, so a guy, and we had a pretty good team that, you know, of course you go through the growing pains, but a guy like that might have made the difference from 8-5 to 11-2.
Sure.
But if you're already loaded, again, it's like, well, he might wind up being the best guy, but I mean, again, they can only play 11 at a time.
But if he knocks their fourth guy, who would have been their third guy, then you have great depth. But
you do. Now,
like
maybe
you
that
said,
fourth guy leaves now. You don't know. This is – it's just a whole new thing.
Unintended consequences.
And I guess naturally, too, I always think like, oh, gosh, what's the worst-case scenario and how could this hurt the Dogs? But I think one thing we can be very confident in from a Georgia football standpoint, Kirby Smart is a master at roster management, and he is going to be at the forefront of this. I have no concerns whatsoever that we will be left behind.
Not worried about it either.
Landscape.
I'm more worried about the sport.
Me
or
too.
The sports themselves.
Me too.
Especially the basketball thing here.
Basketball's
because,
in bad shape. I mean, the one and done has created.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking with our friend Darren from Kentucky, and remember DJ said, well, we were asking him in just in our booth chat, like, well, how hot is Calipari? So it's hot. And then
if you're going to bring in new players every year, you better be good.
Because the guys, you know, our fans, you love your guys.
Yeah.
And you love them and you want to cheer for them. And you're so you don't get those relationships with those.
Right.
And I think especially basketball, because there's you're in shorts and a tank top, that they're not wearing helmets, or, and you're right,
well,
there
for
on
basketball,
the floor.
You're
they're
right
only,
there on them.
They're five
they're
guys.
Not, yeah, they're not wearing things on their head.
Right.
Yeah, you see them, you feel like you're – it's almost like gymnastics where
yes.
You see the girls, you're close to them.
Or, you know, tennis or
yeah,
golf,
exactly,
a sport
exactly.
like that. And
football's a little different, obviously. Baseball's a little different.
But I think in basketball in particular – and it's been a problem for men's college basketball for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think now you throw this in, too, just the fact that you're going to get some one-and-dones. And, you know, so I've started thinking, too, well, a big reason we've seen so many mid-majors make these runs, schools like George Mason, VCU, Butler, go to Final Fours, well, you've got guys that have played together for 3-4 years. Well, now you're also going to see, well, golly, this guy was all West Coast Conference at Eastern Washington. Oh, well, now, well, he's going to transfer to UCLA.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be difficult even for the mid-majors to hang on to their best
yeah.
guys.
Well, that's where the poaching had been done before.
Right.
Now you don't even have to wait a year.
No, it's a
get
tough
them right
thing.
Away.
And again, I get it. It's a debate, and I understand there's a lot of passion. But for me, I just don't feel like it's best for the game. And I want what's best for the game because I love the game. I love college sports.
And I guess Georgia's going to have basically, what, a completely different starting five?
We're going to have a new team.
I guess Horn said he was coming back.
Yeah, but
and is that
but I mean, you're,
the only one I can think of that
you're talking about.
I mean,
about,
maybe a couple of the younger
Jackson
guys.
I guess Jackson Edder's back, but I mean, you're talking
different
about
different team. Basically, that's tough for the fans.
It is. And it's one of those things, if you go through that, say, once every 5-6 years, yeah. Well, that's okay. But what you don't want to have happen is have that be a regular thing at most schools.
Mm-hmm. I would just like to know what schools have the most players in the transfer portal. Because if there's any more than Georgia, that is crazy.
Well, I mean, there are only 13 scholarships in men's basketball.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, it's gonna be nuts, and it's just such a different landscape what we're looking at now, and I know it's frustrating, and for me, I think about what Georgia was doing, and to get a couple of those wins with Johnson and Kamar and Fagan and Wheeler, and now all those guys are gone, and so Coach Crean's job now is to try and bring all these newcomers in here and blend them together, and hopefully the Dogs have a good year, and you're able to get some continuity out of that. But the thing is too, for college sports, we know, I mean, even going back, Dave, to when we were young bucks, relative to pro sports, it's a tremendous turnover, because you went from 4 years of football to, well, starting with, of course, the greatest ever. Well, the great players are gone after three.
Are you talking about Jim Brown?
Yes, but you at least feel, I mean, we got these guys for 3 years. And, I mean, now with the portal, it's just, it's hard for that continuity.
Right.
Looking out. And that's just a tough thing. I don't like it, but again, it's...
Hey, I'm glad we're talking about sports. This time last year, things are different, but it doesn't mean you can't be bummed out about certain things.
No, I know. And that's why when I think about guys like on the football end, I've never met him, but Latavius Breeny is one of my favorite players.
Yeah.
Because he's a guy, he was running third string. Would have been easy for him to say, I'm going to the portal, I'm going somewhere else, so I can start right away. But he worked and worked. And I want to give our young friend, Atlee Morris, His dad texted me after we beat Missouri and said, Atlee said for you to mention that Latavius Breeny played a good game on special teams. And I said, you know what?
You got that right.
He sure did.
Yeah.
He sure did. And so, lo and behold, we have all the defections from the secondary for the bowl game. And here comes Latavius Breeny. He gets that battlefield promotion, and he goes out, that baphmatic baptism by fire. He has 5 tackles, 2 tackles for loss. He was one of our best defensive players that day.
Yep.
And that's where when you're saying, like, all right, this is a guy who put in his work, and he was ready when his number was called, and he succeeded. And so now, I mean, Dave, the woods are filled with stories like this. Now, who knows, with all that Georgia lost in the secondary, I mean, that guy – I'm assuming at the end of spring practice, and we don't do depth charts like we used to do, he's running first string right now. And this is a guy, it would have been easy for him just to pack it in. But some players mature at different times. I was saying about this, Marcus Howard. He really had not done much in his career. Then about midway through his senior year,
oof.
Vanderbilt, Florida. Now he had the great Sugar Bowl. I mean, so a guy like that was a fifth-year senior. And, man, it all hit for him at the same time. So maybe that'll happen for Latavius Breeny.
And, man, that's so weird that you bring up Marcus Howard with the tragic news of Colt Brennan. I am
horrible,
just devastated by that. I hate that for that, for his family and in the Hawaii family. And that game was certainly one that, as we can see now, was certainly a mismatch.
Mm-hmm.
But – the year that guy had.
Oh, he was incredible.
Oh, my goodness.
He threw for 5,000 yards.
And he finished, third in the Heisman voting?
I saw
that news, and it was just,
it's heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking.
And I think especially, Dave, as we get older, like when I was a kid, and I remember how shocked I was when Lynn Bias died,
mm-hmm.
when Don Rogers died. But as you get older now and you start realizing, like, the guys on our team, like we say, we're older than some of the parents
now. Yeah.
So when you see that and you do see somebody like that who is now in his, I guess Colt would have been
37, I think.
36, 37. Yeah. You think, like, boy, they're younger. You still think of them as almost just being a kid. It's just so tragic.
It is.
And you just feel horrible for his family.
And that was such a great bowl game and a great trip for the Dogs, and certainly that'll never be replaced. But then when you hear the news about Cole Brennan, it just makes you sad.
No, it was just horrible news. And what you have to hope is that out of that, he did things in his life that when he had tough times that have inspired and helped other people.
Yeah.
That's what you got to hope.
Sure. But not to end on that note, but certainly, like we said, our condolences to the University of Hawaii sports family and to his family for sure.
I want
to
tell you,
that guy's connected to the University of Georgia.
Now, I'll tell you, if I can tell you a happy story coming out of that. Our men's basketball team was in Hawaii before the Sugar Bowl. Mm-hmm. We were playing in a tournament down there. It was right before Christmas.
Now, were you out there?
I was. Okay. And I can just remember, it was, and even though I knew we were playing, it's still that quick reaction. There were Georgia Hawaii shirts all over Honolulu.
Yeah.
So when I would go just walk for an exercise, I'd see all these Georgia shirts. I'm like, oh, yeah, we're about to play them. Oh, yeah, we're about to play them. But still just seeing all these thousands of G's out there in Hawaii, it was still, when you get that initial reaction, like, we're about to play them. But now in Hawaii, you think, like, say in January, it's maybe the best sports state because you got the first two golf tournaments, the women and the seniors both opened their tours out there too. And for years you had the Pro Bowl as well.
Yep.
But then, you know, obviously the rest of the year, most of the action's on the mainland. But, you know, a lot of folks out there said that was the biggest deal in sports in the history of their state, you know, for that team to go undefeated and to play an SEC blue blood like Georgia.
And with my stepson Matthew having been stationed out there, Carol and I went out there several times. I know it was tough. Somebody had to do it.
That's brutal.
Yeah. So,
and didn't y'all go right after Christmas?
One year we were there for Christmas.
Oh, Melikaliki Maka.
Yeah, exactly. But the thing I noticed, I thought was interesting, is Hawaii, one of the times we're out there, Hawaii was playing in the bowl game.
Okay.
And this would have been like 4 or 5 years ago. And it just wasn't a whole lot of buzz.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't a whole lot of buzz. And then a couple of other times we were out there, when Hawaii wasn't in that bowl game, it was hardly anything at all. But the thing is, the kid, and this is not, I'm not knocking soccer here. It's probably what it's going to sound like. But when we would ride around, and this was just on Oahu, I would notice the kids, and this is in December, they're all throwing the football.
Mm-hmm.
They're not kicking the soccer ball. They weren't throwing a baseball around. All the kids were throwing footballs. But the thing was, they all had pro franchises of shirts and hats they were wearing. It wasn't like a college thing.
No, well, Honolulu, you start to think, it's a big city, and it's an international city,
too.
Oh,
big time. I mean, it's kind of a gateway to the West and the East.
Yes, it is. So I can see, and obviously there have been a lot of great players. Tua's family has roots there, and you know, so Hawaii's probably saying, like, if we could just keep all of our guys in state together. But no, I agree that, and I've certainly noticed the 2 times I went there, they are passionate for football, and I've seen the same thing. Like, if you go to one of those sweet swim up bars, and another great thing, we had a Saturday there, I think it was on a women's trip, and I think we must have had the day off, but it was one of those, like, a swim-up bar thing, so I went and got my exercise in. Well, with the time changes, I mean, I was watching the Jets and Chargers from New York. It's like 9 in the morning.
Yeah.
They're already kicking off. Or maybe it was even 8 in the morning.
And then go out and play golf.
Yeah,
in fact, I think we did that one day.
I'm sure.
It's awesome.
So it was awesome. But again, when I swam up there, there were probably 8 or 9 guys just sitting at the bar having a beer, and there are 4 or 5 TVs. But back to what you said, there were all kinds of different pro games on, but so many, they were Jets fans, they were Bears fans, they were Cowboys fans, Rams
that's
fans,
the thing.
You name it,
And it wasn't, maybe the LA teams might have a little bit of a hold, but no, like Dallas, the New York teams.
Oh, yeah, there's just as good a chance.
So much representation.
You would see a guy with a Knicks hat or a Cowboys hat.
And maybe because there are a lot of people that live there that are – working there, but they're with a lot of the military and that kind of thing. Correct. Maybe that's why you see a lot of that. But it was just interesting that it wasn't as big a college deal by any means.
Well, and I think the other thing with that bowl game, it's such a long way to go. That would be a great bowl if it was one of the elite ones. But I think for a lot of fans, if you're saying, yeah, I'd love to go to Hawaii, but if you're a school like Georgia, like we were 7-4 when we went. It's like,
yeah.
You know, so from a fan standpoint, if you're going to pay the big bucks, you're going to want it to be for one of the big boy games.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that probably is a bit of a tough draw for them. But, you know, if it were a little bit bigger, you know, if they got some teams with some better records out there, and certainly if you got a West Coast team each time,
sure,
I think you could capitalize.
All right, so next week, because we got to wrap this up, you know, tonight we're getting the full NFL schedule, so that'll be interesting. We can talk about that with the NFL teams. We do know the Falcons are opening up, I believe, with the Eagles in Atlanta.
I like their chances better than Atlanta. I think in my lifetime, has Atlanta ever won in Philadelphia? I can't think of it.
It doesn't feel like it.
You remember Mike Quick catching the 99-yarder in overtime?
I do, yes.
I can't remember if that was from Jaws or Randall Cunningham, but I remember Mike Quick going 99.
I want to say it might have been Cunningham.
It might have been, yeah.
And we also know the Falcons are going to play the Jets in London on October 10th.
Well, that's a must win.
Yeah.
We'll need to beat
that's
the Jets.
A neutral site game. The Falcons need to win. In fact, that's their home game, from what I understand, the Falcons' home game. They were going to have only 8 home games this year anyway and 9 on the road. So now they're only going to have 7 at home and 10 away from Atlanta.
I think what they're going to do, if they stay with 17, which is literally and figuratively an odd number, they're just going to go 8-8-1 and have everybody play a game in London, just like everybody plays a Thursday game. And then London.
Or just have everybody play a neutral site game. Mexico, London.
Right, but if they did London, then London wouldn't have a team, but they'd have a game every week.
And then they'd just have a bunch of confused people. So they'd have all these teams rolling in, and they wouldn't know who am I cheering for now?
Yeah.
When do they play Liverpool? When do they play Man U?
We got Man U and Liverpool, and it ain't a friendly.
All right, Jeff.
Enjoyed it.
We got a long drive tomorrow, but it'll be fun.
No, it'll be great.
Headed down to Gainesville and seeing the new place and hopefully bringing back a couple of wins or maybe more.
That'd be awesome. Man, I can't wait. I'm just so grateful and thankful to be getting after it.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So that has been episode number 187 of the Crossover Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. And again, head to the App Store if you have an iPhone, Google Play for an Android, and make sure that you are listening in every week and subscribe and all that good stuff. All right, we got to go. We are desperately
short on time.
Short on time.
We'll let you know who won next week.
What? Are you kidding me?
Dusty Rhodes has got Tully Blanchard in the Boston crowd.
You cannot do it.
Damn it, Tony.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for listening to 960 The Ref and the 960 The Ref app.
You've been listening to The Crossover on 960theref.com.